been spending all this time trying to make my apartment into a place that people walk into and they go, oh, we didn't know Jordan was a duchess. Okay. And I realized that I feel much more at home in a half construction site. And I was thinking about why that is. And I think that there's something that's
in progress.
Like I always imagine when I've had to get hypnotized, they've been like, imagine a safe place. And it's always been a place where there are paint tarps over the furniture and like nice wood, you know, like white drop cloths and nice wood. And I love drop cloths. And I was thinking about it. And I think it's because nothing is fully settled yet and it doesn't have a stagnation quality. You know what I mean?
I do. I live like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
I love the in progress aspect of life.
Yes.
It's
and I
fun.
Think that's why I don't do dishes.
That's a pretty plausible argument you could make. But dishes are nasty, whereas remodeling is clean and it's just got sawdust. I mean, sawdust is clean. It's not smegma on a plate. I beg to differ with you. I do not think that's analogous.
I just think
it's
I might
nice
need to.
Attempt,
I gotta clear some stuff out of my apartment. I think I've decorated too much. There's too much debris.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I venture to guess.
I woke up in such a.
Do you want me to tell him to stop? Sounds like cats fighting in Australia.
Listen, tell him to stop. Thank you. Okay.
I didn't tell him.
I forgot what I was going to say.
You're decluttering your apartment. Because it's got two duchessy bourgeoisie.
It's not duchessy bourgeoisie. It's a piece of shit. But there's too many things everywhere in picture. The decorating. I don't think I like the decorating thing.
You like more austerity, maybe.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm big on austerity.
I just like containers.
I broke up with a girlfriend
things.
Over that. What?
I woke up to what I thought was the house collapsing. I woke up panicking.
I was wondering about that.
And I was like, oh, great. Tornado completely demolishing the house.
Earthquake.
And we're going down, which is the second time that has happened in this bedroom. One time the tree came down. Remember the tree and hit right up against my window while I was sleeping.
Yeah, I remember
which
that.
Was the craziest noise. And this time you ripped the entire porch off with a chain.
And a tractor.
There was no part of you that was like, maybe this is fastened to the, it was completely cut, sawzalled off clean. There was no possibility that you were going to pull.
Well, apparently it
off.
Teetered a little bit. No, yeah, we severed it from the building, then we drug it off.
It teetered a little bit that made you think, oh, it could have gone towards the house.
Yeah, there was a time when it started to lean the wrong way.
And you stopped? Or you just
we just prayed. Pulled it from a different direction.
Oh. And those boys out there, classic upstate. Keep pulling it out, dragging it on out of there. Grab it. That's what they sound like.
You wanted to talk with that overbite.
It's Invisalign. And it's not an overbite.
You did grow up in upstate New York.
I'm just saying, those guys are really... There's a big fat one out there with no shirt
Hercules!
On. That's Hercules?
He doesn't wear no shirt.
That's not Hercules.
Yeah, Hercules is out
no,
there.
No, there's another
oh,
one.
There's another one that's not Hercules, yeah.
Little fentanyl boys.
They follow you. One of them follows you, so you might want to clean it
I
up.
I like them. I like them.
Oh, good. That's better.
I think it's weird how, like, there was a time in Ithaca where, you know how, like, I don't know how to describe this, but there's, like, there will be, like, an ironic phase of hipsters' lives where they start, like, delving into, like, they'll go to, like, Bingo in the local city, or they'll go to, like, Turning Stone, the casino. And then there was one point where they started going to the Creeker. And I was like, we can't go there. And I remember going to for somebody's birthday party and walking in and then being like, oh, my God, this place is perfect. Pool tables. And then there's guys at the bars being like, Joba, sup? And I was like, shh, shh. And they were like, how do you know that? You know, it's very weird. The Ithaca-Lansing dichotomy is weird. Or just the weird dichotomy in this town of being
blue in the middle of a Red Sea.
Yeah. No, not blue in the middle of the Red Sea. Being like this entire town is like... It's like, it feels like everybody's going to like, you know, wearing prairie dresses and the mothers are all very like, you know, the wives of musicians and stuff. And then it feels like our family is slightly like the like rascals is the way that it feels.
Oh, we're not as crunchy?
Crunchy, wholesome, wicker stuff. It's just always.
I think
felt
you're
like
making
that.
A gross generalization
about Ithaca.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how it's always felt to me. It's
gingham
always...
dresses.
What yeah, not gingham dresses. I'm sorry, but grassroots when everybody does the two-step thing, and it has always felt. You know what I mean? You're a third generation Ithacan.
Well, not exactly. My grandfather didn't get here till he was like 20. But yeah, I guess you're right. That does count. Yeah. I mean, he was in. Yeah.
Don't you get sick of not having good conversations with people?
Yes.
And what do you do instead?
Read and listen to podcasts.
And worship at the altar of Sam Harris?
I follow Sam. He gives me a lot of intellectual stimulation amongst the other people that are ancillary to his thinking, like Daniel Schmachtenberger and the various people that he interviews, and you know, listening to even just the various people like Scott Galloway and
remember when I got kicked out of that Buddhist class when that Buddhist professor at Alfred got really mad at me because remember I was all defiant, or because she was trying to promote, she gave out all these pamphlets on how bad the new atheists are, and then I demanded literature on from them so that we could have both sides, and then it was like this epic beef that went on forever until she ended up leaving the school.
It's funny because a new atheist, in a lot of respects, at least with Sam, he's not a Buddhist, but he adheres to a lot of that access to transcendence that the Buddhism espouses. With respect to no self.
But that was in like 2000. I mean, there was a phase, right, in 20, whatever that was. What was
you mean
that?
When him and Hitchens and Dawkins.
Yeah, when it was like anti-spirituality almost.
Well,
like, that's how
he was the only
it.
Writer that had that aspect. Yeah. Dawkins, Hitchens, and Dennett are all.
Dennett, okay, Becker is denial of death. He thinks everything that we do is because of death, right? That's Becker. It's because of our knowledge of death.
Unconsciously, for the most part, our knowledge of our own demise has us have culture be our access to us to creating something that lives on past us. So we're very driven to have greater social status because of that'll give us a legacy, you know, buildings named after us. Children are actually, even Becker says, are to deal with the terror of death. Because they live on past your demise.
Is it the terror of death? I'm going to make all this. Yeah. It is. I think it's less the terror of death. I think that's too unknown. I think it's the terror of dying alone. You know what I mean?
Well, Becker isn't addressing that. He's addressing that one day you've distinguished that one day you won't be here. And that is terrifying because your significance is diminished to nothing.
I never understood the significance thing.
What do you mean? People want to be relevant all the time.
I know, but in death, that's always, I just, that's the one part I don't agree with, because I feel like the terror comes in, it not in, I'm going to leave this world and not matter, and people are going to go on without me. I don't think that's where the fear is. I think the fear is eternal darkness. And I think eternal darkness is quelled by being like, if people care about me when I die, I won't be alone in the darkness or something like that.
I disagree. I think the fear of eternal darkness is just the whole buried alive, you know, thing that people are terrified of. But the denial of death. I mean, when you think about it, Becker's book is denial of death. So he's articulating those ways that we deny we're going to die. You know, it's like Kierkegaard said. We are paralyzed with the trivial.
Yeah.
And that's kind of weaved into, you know, I have to plead a certain level of ignorance on this, but weaved into Becker's thing of like, we just engage in these trivial, stupid acts of self-aggrandizement in order that we live on, that we think we live on in some way. And our tribalism, Becker and Solomon, you know, Sheldon Solomon and those guys also, our tribalism has some relationship to our fear of death, because if we are allied with whatever group, that group can give us life after death, because they will live on, right? So if I have an allegiance to fill in the blank religion and I'm staunch supporter and maybe I even go out on conquest for it, then I have eternal immortality.
Yeah,
I mean, I have eternal immortality because my deity says that. You know, that's a big reason to do it. But also my allegiance to it means that you who I leave behind, who is involved in that same pursuit, will carry on my biggest passion, which was this religion. So then it'll continue past my death, and I can have a sense while living that I have eternal life. Because my immersion in this discipline, this religion, will give me some idea that I'll live on eternally, because it lives on beyond me, kind of like a corporation.
It just seems like the most blasphemous thing you could do is to try and predict what will happen, is to espouse that you know what will happen. You know what I mean? Like, it always, I always thought about that, like people being like, well, when I go to heaven, I want this to happen, so I'm gonna, like Sandy, like Aunt Sandy, how she's always trying to convert us, and it's like, she'll be like, well, I want this to happen for you, so I'm going to try and turn you. And I always was like, aren't you going to go to hell just for trying to talk shit about what's going to be, you know? Like, I was talking to Ismail about the Quran, and I was like, how come?
I think it's blasphemous to have life after death be more important than life before death. I mean, how is that being...
That's not Christian, I don't think, being, is it? That's not Jewish.
All of them have life after death.
Not Jewish. I think Jewish doesn't have...
No, they
do. Jewish doesn't have hell.
They don't have hell, but they believe that there's some kind of greater grace after death. You know, it's a better... But you're right, it's more embedded in Christianity, which I find to be more blasphemous than anything, because it's like some... However you got this life...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, you think you'd respect and honor that.
Yes.
But instead, it's like, fuck this, I'll just trash the earth, and I'll trash my... Even my residence in some Orthodoxy, it doesn't give a shit about your, like, house. You know, it could be all shitty because you don't give a shit. I mean, so half the problem that's happening in Israel right now, do you know they're going to conscript the Orthodox Jews, I understand? Or they're looking
What's
at...
What's conscript mean?
They're going to bring them into the military. Right now, they get to just sit around and read the Torah instead of going into war, but they sit around
voting
for war, but then they don't go.
The IDF.
The IDF is not made up of anybody Orthodox, because if you're Orthodox...
But now there's
going to
be...
the book...
Hasidic Jews with curls holding... that'll be hilarious.
They're talking about... You know how everybody's required to serve there, right?
They're going
to
have their little tentacles coming out.
Dreadlocks and stuff.
Look out over there, boys.
They won't go. They have control over the government to a large extent. So, it's like wild, because it's like these people sit around with their religious text worshiping... There are books that are on their heads and stuff, and
I know one almost hit me in Coyote because he was praying in his wheel the other day, and I don't pray and drive.
He's praying at the wheel.
They have to pray all the time, so he's praying.
So those people sit around fomenting aggression of their neighbors, and then having millions of children that then vote in the same way, put this ultra white wing government into power, and then go, well, I'm not going to go to war. I can't go to war. I'm busy studying the Torah, and they're on welfare.
Yes.
They're on state, they're state funded to sit around and
Well, maybe they're thinking of themselves as the historians of the civilization.
They're not historians.
Yeah,
you simply read the book and become infinitely more pious.
Or the monks.
While they impregnate their wives multiple times. Well, you know, we would be well served to get away from religious dogma in all regards. Considering it's
what. Do you think we're going to sway back into it or away from it?
We're already swaying back into it. Our country is about to become a theocracy, by the way.
How?
What do you mean, how? That's who's voting for Trump. Those are the supporters. Timothy Mellon just contributed $50 million, did it, because he's concerned. He who is given his everything he has by whatever grandfather considers. That we're going to hell in a handbasket as we move into socialism, has a big Christian thing behind him.
Socialist is not with God?
So the relationship between socialism, his Christian background in socialism, I'm not making a direct relation, but he thinks that the squad, amongst other forces of evil, are going to turn America from capitalist to socialist.
Who's the squad?
AOC and Jamal Bowman.
Oh, the squad.
And,
but do they think that we will not go to heaven if we're socialist? Is that true?
There's no correlation other than I believe he has a Christian background, you know, faith, and a whole bunch of other devotees of Trump are the evangelicals. The people that voted with him last time are because of the abortion thing. So you have these evangelicals looking to get rid of homosexuals, looking to get rid of transgender, and making sure that we don't...
calling transgenders transgender because...
Whatever.
All these transgender...
What? How do you say that plural?
Transgender
so
people.
You can say transgender people.
Yeah, you can't say transgender.
I had trouble with that recently.
I know. You said blacks one time.
Is that sacrosanct?
You said blacks.
Black people.
No, yeah, you have to say black people.
Yeah, no, blacks is kind of shitty. Transgenders I didn't think was bad, but I guess in a similar way. It is analogous.
You can't say any of it anymore. It's so weird. You can't say, yeah.
Because you're lumping them into a category, even though they choose. They're
it's like,
they're
it's,
arguing for that
I
category.
Mean, even on stage when I say I was raised by dykes, the plural, like, it hits harder than if I say I was raised by a dyke. Because dykes is like all the, like, you guys are in some place feeding off of each other's vaginas.
Cabal.
Yeah.
We're interconnected by our genitals.
Yeah.
There's electricity going.
Maybe it's because of the whole, the Democrats have, I mean, we were looking at that, like, a chart the other day that was like, you know, if the center is, like, core values, tradition, family.
Honor.
And then it stems out to, you know, public resources, social, you know, mobility, economic, you know, all of that. And it was like the liberals care way more there. And not at all about family and vice versa. And at first I was like...
Not... They do care about family. It's just not their... It's,
way less.
The problem is that Democrats have a more multidimensional care Venn diagram, you know. And the conservatives have like two or three. You know, they have like three. So it's much easier to lobby them, although that has been split recently. That's been splintered. And that's what people are banking on in the,
how
in the election.
Split?
Because the gun, I think the gun people are now less as fervent about it. There's like a contingent that doesn't agree, and I think they've been splintered, and I can't remember how exactly, but they're less able to be lobbied on these three criterion that formerly would coalesce them into a.
Who the Democrats or
the conservatives? Yeah. You used to be able to lobby them easily through these three lever points, right? But recently, a contingent of them has eschewed the former devotion to those values, right? And it might be, I can't remember, it might be in the gun thing, but the family is still super important. Anti-homosexuality is in there pretty strong still. So it must be the gun. But I don't understand why they haven't been splintered on the basis of already winning anti-abortion, that they could stop with that one. And that may be causing a fracture, actually. So that's what people say, is there's moderate conservatives breaking off into the more center that Biden is counting
on.
But
there's also way more liberals headed towards the center.
Yeah, you do. Independents. Independents are, there's plenty of independents that are scared about socialism.
No, I think centrists are also pissed off at the
DEI and wokeism.
Yeah.
Pushed a lot of people over the edge. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been pushed slightly over the
edge.
Yeah.
Well, we all should be. It's bullshit. So much of it is just crazy. I mean, did you hear about the Google bots that were created that were supposed to be like SS soldiers or something?
No.
And the AI machine was programmed by the wokosphere, the wokistan, to such a degree that the bots came out. That the archetypes that they created, they were black people. You know, there was no white Aryan asshole that it manifested because it wasn't programmed to consider that a viable.
Wait, what
person.
Did it tell them to do? It said create an SS soldier.
Yeah, it was like it was something in the German army back in the 30s. That.
I mean, I think I tried looking up like some. I went into ChatGPT and was like. I think I might have even been like, show me the history of the bell curve or something like that. And even that, I think ChatGPT was like...
No, not going there.
Just shut my computer off.
Right.
Yeah, which is crazy. I mean, you can't even ask it. So what is that? It's just worried about getting...
It's been programmed. Where it's scraping its information from was put there by people like you. people in your age that wouldn't put that information in there in order to be PC.
Yeah. I mean, also all the AI working on social media and stuff. Like if you say the word kill, like if you say like, oh, you know, here's Jake at a club, he killed, it'll flag you and be like, did you say kill? You know? And that, to me, that's just a video game that we all have to participate in and play by its rules because we're using it to, I don't know. It feels like it's like you have to follow its laws. I mean, the community guidelines are ridiculous and sometimes they shut your thing down and then your money goes away, which you need, which sucks because they've made it reliant on you. And then they say you're not allowed to do certain things and then they slap you, you know, with a reprimand that they say isn't even real. And you're like, it is real. If people search in my name, they do not find me. And they're like, no, there's no such thing as shadow banning. Whereas every one of my friends have been shadow banned. I've been shadow banned. And you can't go to Instagram about it because they're like, doesn't exist.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's a glitch.
Wow, that's Orwellian.
Yeah, yeah, it's really weird.
It's a glitch, they say? They just brush it off as a malfunction in the cat in the Matrix or something?
I said white trash on, like, I called people white trash. And I guess white trash is derogatory because that would mean that there's white trash and then, why is it derogatory? Because that would mean black people are just all trash. What is it?
Well, that is derogatory to white people.
No, it's not. It's towards black people is how it's derogatory somehow.
Oh, by some convoluted way of thinking?
Yes. Mm. It's somehow racist.
But at the same time, social media is damaging.
That implies white by default is not trash. So you have to specify.
Well, maybe there's just no black trash. So what about that?
Well, I didn't make the rules.
Oh, sorry. I thought you did. Sorry, I was unaware.
That's a good answer.
But, yeah, that whole thing, that's odd. And we talked to a guy the other day who, this was interesting. He, when I got canceled online.
What do you mean by got canceled? I never witnessed any of this.
I can't get canceled, but when everybody came after me for posting the.
I didn't even see any of that kerfuffle. Where would I have witnessed
in
that?
In the comments.
In your comments on Instagram, underneath that particular thing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't look.
Right. And. Just it was like every day there were stories posted with my face and then it said turf over it. Turf, you know.
Oh.
And this guy DM'd me and he like wrote this super eloquent message to me being like, hey, I want you to know that you're probably feeling this way, this way, and this way. And I was like, I am. And then he was like, but you should be proud of yourself and everything that you did. Like watching you say it, you know that you have like a good heart and you're just trying an idea and there's an innocence to it that I think is lost right now. Like he said a whole thing. And then we were at a show the other day and he came in and was like, hi, I'm the guy who DM'd you. And I was like, dude, you like really saved me that day. Thank you so much. And he was like, well, I know how it is because I'm a journalist. And he had taken a photo of a man with Ebola. And it's a beautiful photo. And it's a guy who like got through he was in quarantine and he went a little cuckoo from quarantine and ran out and he was really contaminated. And he's like delirious and, you know, these two guys in hazmat suits are like holding him up and it's this like amazing photo and he works for the National Geographic and they took it and then it was online in like National Geographic's top whatever of the year. And then all of these people came after him and were like, how dare you as a white man, profit off of the black man's did it. And it was like, I mean, that was just the most cut and dry. Like what I said, I can imagine going after, but that I'm like, he's literally showing what's happening and you're going after him. Like this is a whole new level of
censorship,
but not only censorship, but
insane level.
But
yeah.
It's like doing worse.
Right, right, right.
Because now what's going to happen is the white guy is going to go, oh, I'm not going to take a picture of that, you know, and they're going to turn towards something that doesn't exist. And now we don't know that. About this actual black man.
Well, to me, the worst part about this whole thing is it just exacerbates racism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in some respects, it just amplifies it because it continues to draw attention to the distinctions. The guy had Ebola. Could have been anybody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was that guy. And he was in a very dramatic...
And it was in fucking Africa or something.
Yeah, like how are you going to get a white guy with Ebola?
Yeah.
And but all of this stuff just continues to bring... all this to awareness and distinction. We have to make these distinctions all the fucking time. One of the things I love about watching you guys down there sometimes is that you just blur it all. You guys are all good friends. You shoot the shit with each other. You know, there's, you know, the Rosetto study in Pennsylvania, the Italian community of 1700 in Pennsylvania.
No.
There's, in the 1950s, a bunch of cardiologists, researchers, were like canvassing the country or something to discover this aberration in this little town in Pennsylvania. Like, there's no evidence of any cardiac events in this little community. Like, what the fuck? And they're like, we got to go study these guys. And they descend upon this little community of Italians. And like, well, we're, for sure, they probably eat really well. And they're like, no, they substitute olive oil for, they substitute lard for what they used, formerly used as olive oil. Oh, well, they definitely get lots of exercise, don't they? No, they all got fat bellies and, well, they must have very low stress jobs. No, they're all hard labor kind of work, you know? Nope, none of it. They're like, what the fuck is going on here? These people are the healthiest we've ever seen. And then they followed them around. And every night after their ports, you know, at dinner, they go and shoot the shit in their neighborhood. They go talk to everybody. And you know how they're talking to each other? They're fucking giving each other shit.
Really?
They're busting each other's balls.
Yeah.
You know, just like, what do you, I saw your daughter the other day. She was wearing her shorts. What the fuck are you talking about? Yeah. You need to deal with that. Like, what's that? Or, you know, giving each other a bunch of crap all the time.
Yeah.
And it's straight up brutal honesty.
Yeah.
And that's what we fucking need.
Yeah.
You know, not like,
remember being in Italy,
pussyfooting around the whole thing. Then the computers arose and they started getting cardiac conditions.
What?
Well, they didn't walk around as much because they were stuck to their stupid ass computer, but they weren't being intimate with each other. Yeah. When you can give somebody shit, that's intimacy.
Yeah.
And they laugh with you at themselves. That's the highest form of intimacy.
Well,
I think, you know, it's one of those
kisses and saying I love you is also nice.
No, you have always been adverse to kisses. But anyways, it of course, affection in other forms. But that isn't a bad thing inside of, you know, you and your friend the other day in your podcast, you know, you giving him a hard time about
Ian being gay man?
Well, Ian, you and Ian are constantly busting each other's shit, you know,
yeah.
And calling each other out in a playful way where it's like the truth, but you love each other.
Well, it's also like when somebody calls you out, like when somebody makes fun of you accurately for something going on, there is a level of being seen where you're like, oh, you are experiencing me. You
fully.
Are knowing. Yeah,
fully.
Totally.
And if you can not take yourself so fucking seriously as this PC shit is having us get hyper serious about, you know, like the third rail that every fucking thing is with what you guys sadly have to deal with. You know, you can't talk about transgender. It's a third rail. I'm going to light myself on fire.
Yeah.
If I touch it. It's bullshit. It just makes it exacerbates the distinctions. I mean, a transgender person made choices for themselves in their lives. They're still a person. They're still a person that's suffering in many different ways, not unlike everybody else that hasn't gone through that type of trauma or type
yeah.
of, you know, life choices. Everybody's a human and dealing with similar, you know, the thoughts in our head which torment us on a regular basis. You know, have I attained the right level of success? And look at them. They look better than me. The relentless comparison that humans do all the time. Everybody's tormented by that. I don't give a crap who you are, what religion you are, what color skin you have. We're all tortured
also,
by that shit.
There's also the feeling of having to muster up the courage to tell somebody what you think to them. Like I was on BNN and one of our friends, he like lost his two of his dogs were lost in 1 month. And he was, and I like made fun of him on the podcast, not to him, but I was like, well, he's a bad dog, you know? And then he came up to me and he was like, you think I'm a bad dog owner? And I was like, no, I'm sorry. Well, I said that. I'm just fucking around. And then I got Coyote and I went up to him recently and I was like, hey, I would have burnt me to the ground if I were you. I mean, I can't even fathom losing my dog. And the fact that, like, I'm so sorry I said that. And that was so out of line. And now me and him are like super close. The other day he told me about his mom passed away. And like, it really, because we cleaned up this mess together and not through fucking DMs or through comments, it made us, we're now like
or,
very
or,
close
or,
and
or doubled down.
Right,
yeah,
right.
You shouldn't be upset about your dog. Yeah.
You're right, because if he had messaged me and been like, hey, what the fuck, man? I might have doubled down and been like, it's a fucking podcast, girl. But because he said it in my face and was like, hey, I was like, oh, here it is, you know?
You reconsidered flexibility.
Yes, yes, reconsider flexibility,
yes.
Totally.
And like it's some type of horrible thing to rethink what you just blurted. You know, like some, what did I emailed somebody the other day because I had a mouth fart. And I said some fucking stupid ass thing to them. You know, and I emailed them, I go,
what'd you say?
I just had a mouth fart.
What'd you say?
Oh, I don't know. I said something. I was working with
you have
this,
a lot of mouth farts.
Yeah, I do.
You have a lot of them.
Good thing I'm good at cleaning them up. Yeah, I do. You know what your father used to say about me, right?
What?
He'd go, it's not that Kath has no stopgap between her brain and her mouth. It's that she has a superconductor.
Yeah. That is how it is.
So, anyways,
I remember walking
I
in.
Did
who
one.
Did we walk in here? What? Maybe remember my high school boyfriend came in and you're like, you have a unibrow. And he was like, oh, like just immediately.
No, I'm sure
everybody.
I said hello first.
Oh, my God. She was doing a really cute thing with her face.
I'm sure I said hello or
Nelly
something.
Would come in and be like, so Nelly, you anorexic again? How's that going for you? All the time. Anything that happened. Brianna, you going to put pants on today or are we just going to walk around trying to get raped?
Oh, come on, it wasn't.
I'd be like, Mom, I think Brianna's prettier than me. And we'd be like, well, she's a genetic celebrity and you're funny.
What?
What did you say the other day where I was worried about my weight and you go, you're funny enough, it doesn't matter what you look like. And I was like, hey, thank you, but hey. Or I say on stage when my half hour came out, you go, well, it's not your best work, but you're brave for putting it out there. I was like,
I believe in not lie. And then recently you said to me, you go, Mom, just lie.
Yeah. And you go, you want me to lie to you? You want me to say you look good when I don't think you do? And I'm like, uh-huh. Yes, I do.
How does that feel considering if I were then to just say, wow, you put on
would have literally
10 pounds and I go, yeah, you look great. Wouldn't you question?
Nope. I'd go, well, I guess I don't look as bad as I thought. And then I would be happier that day because you know what? I have the accurate person in there. I want you to say, no, I don't ever want you to say that. I don't ever want you to say.
But don't, won't you then, that's insane, I know. Won't you then question my.
Just watch for a second. Just stop petting her for 1 second. Bring her over here so show the camera what's happening.
Come here, Evie. Come here,
look
girl.
At this.
Come on.
Look at.
Come on. Up.
I mean, really incredible.
Up. Come on, you can do it. Come on, girl. Come on.
Mom adopted these two giant pit bulls because their owner passed
not
away.
Giant.
They're
good
big.
Good girl. Good girl. Come on.
That one is huge. That one's a dinosaur.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know how to balance that. I want honesty, but I also want.
Lies.
Yeah. How do you do that? Because I am about the radical honesty thing. I guess I would like to be. I would like there to be. I would like there to it to be punctuated with the truth. Like, yeah, you look a little heavy right now, but you know what? It's so easy for you to get that off. I've seen you do it before. You'll do it again. And, you know, something just brutal honesty. There needs to be also the other side of the truth, the good side as well.
Oh, I can see that. I have to say that is embedded in my thinking. Like when Jamie put on all that weight, there's never a moment that I didn't think that she couldn't. There's never a moment I don't think that.
That was awesome. Yep. When she became a fat hog.
She wasn't a fat hog.
She was a fat fatty and we got along so well. Remember? Because she couldn't get it off. Because when I was growing up, she was like, just stop eating all the time. And then I'd be like, it doesn't matter what I do. It doesn't come off. And then she couldn't get the weight off.
Do you want the dog to block me?
And then she was like struggling. And I was like, welcome. Join me, sister.
All right, Evie, off.
Watch, I want the camera to see her do the pet thing.
Okay, she already did it. She did it once. She's a good girl. Look at her little face.
I know, she's to die for. Okay, stop petting.
It has to come from the front. The pets have to come from.
Oh, yeah.
Go like this. She's a good girl. Yes. Oh. It's a good girl.
I don't want to go back to New York. I'd rather be shot.
See?
Yeah.
All right. So.
Okay.
We're going to talk about PC shit.
Yeah.
I don't know when, how that's all going to change. I mean, they fired all those DEI presidents of those universities.
Who?
Those three.
Evie Down.
Come on, girl.
Oh, okay.
Oh. The presidents of the universities that talked at the congressional, were interviewed at the congressional panel and couldn't make a statement about the anti-Semitic stuff that was happening on campuses. They couldn't say anything about it. They couldn't make a statement that that wasn't a good thing.
Who couldn't do it?
These three university presidents, and they all lost their jobs.
What did they say?
They danced around the whole thing, and put a bunch of jargon around. Or a bunch of...
Wait, they lost their jobs for not being succinct, for not being clear about it?
They couldn't speak out against the pro-Palestinian support protests and say, this isn't right. This anti-Semitism
right.
on my Did campus they... is not right. It's completely a bad thing. And they couldn't say it. They did the shuffle.
And then they got fired for doing the shuffle?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm. They got fired or they got put into lesser positions. Like one is still a professor.
Who demanded that?
Their trustees.
Oh, who are supporters of Israel?
No, they were just, actually Cornell didn't happen. They
Why?
Were just, the trustees were basically like, you can't not say something about the brutal attack on the Israeli citizens and also say something about the anti-Semitism that we're witnessing on our campus as being something that is just straight up wrong. Like they couldn't even come out and go, yes, that is wrong.
But even if they had come out and done it, wouldn't the students have protested until they lost their
They
job?
Might have, but yeah. The trustees are the ones that hired them.
So the trustees are Israel supporters.
You can say both at the same time. You can say I support.
Well, yeah, but also isn't there something about the universities getting a massive amount of money? I mean, isn't there a huge amount in the what is it called?
Qatar.
Endowment?
Kuwait contributes a huge amount of money to American universities. Yeah.
So isn't there part of the trustees being like, bitch, you're supposed to say that Israel is doing what it needs to be doing? And
They could have said both, and they wouldn't.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, maybe they didn't lose their jobs because they're being, they're pussyfooting around. Maybe they lost their jobs because of all the money that
all the Jewish money?
Yeah.
It's not true. There's a huge amount of Arab money that.
Arab money?
Yeah, Kuwait and I think it's Kuwait and Qatar contribute, are the largest contributors to our universities. That's part of the reason that there hasn't been as much backlash against the Palestinian protesters, supporters.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Our universities are funded. I mean, these Arab, the oil-rich countries have a lot of money and they contribute to the American universities.
Why do they do that?
Support their students coming here. Maybe because they know that they're going to send their citizens to our universities. Assad went to America, got his entire, the Syrian despot, all his degrees are from America.
Really?
Yeah, and then he goes back and is contributory to millions of murders. And it's weird, right? He has a medical degree from here. He's a doctor, medical doctor.
I'm really sorry. Who's Assad?
What?
Who's Assad?
He's the president of Syria, where the horrible civil wars have been raging.
And he got his medical degree?
The Syrian war is like, check it out on Wikipedia. It's unbelievably complicated.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's so complicated. You can't even like hardly get it. I've tried to get it, but you can't.
It's still going on right now?
It's diminished, but I believe there is still factions that are fighting against each other. The government troops are still fighting some sect. And I don't even know. I don't think it's Sunni Shia, although that might be a part of it. Isn't that so crazy? The Sunni Shia thing. It's like one was the uncle of Muhammad and one was the brother. And we're going to argue about that such that we want to kill each other. Who
That's
cares?
Not what they're arguing about.
It is.
No, it's territory. And that one of them fucked
no,
their
they
girlfriend.
Hate each other because they believe in different things.
They do not.
Yes.
That's not really where the hate comes from.
Phenomenon or something.
But it's a territory thing, it's a money thing, or it's a you took my wife thing.
You're wrong.
What do you mean? There's no way that somebody's going to drive a knife into somebody and be like, it was Abraham,
ideology
bitch.
Motivates more than money.
I don't know if that's true.
It is true. Well, how about the you got architects and engineers that drove planes into our buildings. You think they did that for money? They had plenty of money. They had plenty of money. Osama bin Laden had huge amounts of money. He didn't give a fuck. He wanted to get rid of the infidels that had, were hanging out in Saudi Arabia and Egypt.
That's still also power. He wants power.
No, he believed in a particular dogma, and we were violating it by occupying the sacred ground of Muhammad. Us infidels. Do you don't think that they don't look at our websites and see our scantily clad women and really think that we are satanic?
Well, I do the same thing.
You look at... I think it's fucked up, too. I see people walking down the street with their little butt cheeks are hanging out.
The butt
like,
cheeks
what's
are crazy.
With that?
I mean, OnlyFans is going to make me join ISIS. I tell you what. I mean, it's really out of control. You know what's happening now? So I was talking to my friend who has a girlfriend, and he's like...
Do you want her to get down? Little Evie, you're so good girl. Look at her little face.
And maybe could you call her and then pet her? Will you call her?
He was petting her. Evie's his favorite. Come on, girl. Come on, off.
Go ahead. Okay, perfect.
What does he say?
He said I was wrong about the time frame. So I was talking to a friend the other day, and he said a woman on OnlyFans will send him a picture if you subscribe, like every week or every day, and it's like for you, and it's looking at the camera, and it's like with your tits out. And I was like, I think that's way worse. That is cheating. It's basically cheating.
Does she speak his name or something? Like she says
things? I don't
know.
I don't care. There's something personal, the personalization of it and the everyday getting it and looking forward to it.
Yeah, because you get emotionally attached to that woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Porn stars, they're literally taking a different man's dick. If you get emotionally attached to them, you're a simp cuck, right? But like you can like them and like you like movie stars, but you're not going to be like, that's my girl as she's taking a huge dick in her ass, you know what I mean? But this girl is being like, I'm only taking your dick, you know what I mean? It's not, it's mythological, but or like my friend, or you know, Bobby Kelly,
they text each
about,
other too, in particular.
Yeah,
their texting is what makes them the most money, I understand. And they hire people, and guess what they're called? Chatterers.
Oh, yeah, chatters or chatterers?
Chatters. You hire chatters, and because you And I know this one lady that I read about in the New York Times. She has analyzed every word and discovered what words make more money to send in the text.
Holy shit.
Yeah. They
like
have a
what?
$10 million dollar
swollen
business.
Cock.
I don't know. Yeah. You choked. I choked on your cock.
Oh, yeah. Like words like that.
Yeah. I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And so they have an entire retinue of people that text these men. Almost always men. Yeah. Yeah. So actually kind of surprising in light of that whole, you know, discipline, that whole arena of money making, that we aren't more fucked up. You know, that there aren't more mass shootings.
Why?
Well, I don't know, because people just seems like they would cause you to be a certain level of derangement that would ensue. Because if you're spending all your time getting a hard on from a text message that never gets requited, you know.
Why aren't you more?
I mean, maybe you're jerking off and that works. Maybe we, you know, that thing that I saw on the podcast the other day, that robotic blowjob machine.
That thing is crazy.
Maybe we should hand those out across the world to the
incels. It's called a hand. It's a hand.
It had lips.
Okay, but you can use your hand to get
Well, apparently. Well, yeah, but your hand gets old. I mean, you know the feeling of all your, you know.
No, what needs to happen is when two people come together and they meet each other, they need to not have a stop it. Thank you.
Oh, do you want me to make him stop?
They need to not have a vetting process of virtues that the person has, that's what all my friends say. He has to vote liberal. He has to be pro abortion. He has to He has to all these things. And it has nothing to do with the connection between the person. It always comes down to this. Do they compliment my taste?
Do they compliment my tits?
Taste.
Yeah, they have to have shared values. It makes sense that people want to have shared values. But the problem,
I don't think so. I think in the past it was like,
it was arranged marriages.
Yeah, but even, I guess that is true. I mean, you have to have but right now it feels like it's like, your shared values could be like, I think that, you know, it could be.
Are you advocating that women reduce their threshold so that they fuck more men, so that calms them down, so that we don't have the intransigence that we're experiencing in the world right now? Guys, incels?
No,
you know, Peterson thing, forced monogamy?
It isn't obvious to me. I hate my wife. She looks like a pig. I can't leave her. I wish I could, so none of you can, fuckers.
She doesn't look like a pig. She's lovely. She's not that much more attractive than them. They're fine.
She does not look like a pig, but she does look like a witch.
Well, okay, so now we're talking about looks again. Well, I don't know if she looks like a... Anyways, I don't know how you correct the incel problem, but it is a problem. I mean, Galloway talks about it, where young women are choosing older men preferentially.
Yeah.
Because they have money.
No, and there's other reasons.
No,
too.
That's the reason.
No, younger men are immature. Well, you know what younger men are?
They have security. Let's put it in the words. They have greater levels of security. If you're going to procreate...
That 70-year-old I was boxing with today, that 70-year-old man...
You were boxing with a 70-year-old guy?
He was the coach that we boxed with this morning. There was a level of he didn't... My perception of him was not going to move him at all, that allowed him... to be kind to me. Like, it was like he wasn't at all preoccupied with how he was coming off, so he just had this like radiating interest in each client, so it allowed me to like be embarrassing.
Absolutely. And with age comes the diminishment of the ego,
but I also think right now men are really lost because they don't have a job that they care about. They're quaky.
Well, that's not the only thing that causes them to be destabilized. The other thing that causes is the empowerment of women, right? They're not as needed anymore. Not nearly as much. You know, you don't have to be the breadwinner, and you don't have to protect them. Women have their own means of taking care of themselves physically, you know, in terms of whatever, fill in the blank, heavy lifting or stuff like that. I mean, there's other mechanisms for you to take care of these things. So you don't need the attributes of a male like you used to. You don't need protection after you've given birth.
Then how come it's like I can't... Then how come it's, you know... My friends are like, yeah, no, they feel like they're lost and meaningless. But then when their girlfriend needs anything of them or needs like them to... then they get resentful. That's a weird thing. You know what I mean? Like, there's a resentment towards women when they need them. And then there's also a resentment towards women because we don't need them. So is there just an overall resentment towards women?
That could be arising. I mean, I've noticed with men that when you need them, like a lot of guys that work for me, they appreciate being needed. I mean, they really like it. Everybody wants to be a hero. Being a hero is part of Ernest Becker, too.
Really?
Yeah, everybody's looking to be a hero, right? And with men, they've been taught since they were little that they're supposed to rescue damsels in distress or rescue fill in the blank. You know, and I get that. That's very compelling. I like to rescue people, you know. But and now they probably could get confused because it's like, I need to do my own thing and be individualized now and not be someone who can be counted on by somebody else. And they are pulled by the desire to actually be able to contribute to somebody, because that's a really good feeling for all of us. When you contribute to somebody else, you help somebody with... It's part of the reason that everybody in remodeling is just this really kind-hearted person, I think, because we're all sort of that type of person where we want to help people out and we'll sacrifice our income, you know, in some respects. But at the same time, if you're struggling to have a stability, in financial stability, you might be reticent and resentful of somebody pulling you away for no compensation.
Right.
So it's a push-pull phenomenon. That's the other thing. that's a universality about being a human, is being pulled and pushed from different, being pulled in many different directions as we're buffeted through life, that has nothing to do with our ethnicity. Probably is exaggerated when you've been structurally, you know, institutional poverty and institutional discrimination that you've experienced for generations. That probably gets even worse. But we all experience it at our own level. The richest person is tormented. The richest white person is still tormented. I mean, I get it. It's not in the same category, but there's a certain universality to, and that's a lot of what I think Sam is trying to bring about by people having a greater level of their.
I was just thinking that. Yeah, the only way I mitigate that is with Sam stuff, and well, also the
people cut through it with religion too. Transcendence.
Yeah, transcendence, but also the dude, the no free will thing. When I bring that up, there's one person in the room that gets furious every time, like completely enraged. And they're like, I do have free will. Watch, I can choose this thing. And I'm like, of course you can choose that thing. Of course. And I do think Dennett is right in a lot of ways where Dennett?
Compatibilism? No.
Yeah, kind of, because he is saying it is semantic. He's saying within the structure of your own life, you do get to choose between chocolate or vanilla. Like you do get to the structure of your own life. You don't choose, but that illusion is real. You know what I mean? Like,
you hear what you just said? The illusion is real.
Well, it is a choice. That has come to be...
Right, but once you... Yes, of course. But once you immerse yourself deeply in the understanding that we're all stuck in a deterministic universe, you can stop fucking evaluating everybody on their fucking decisions. Their decisions weren't really made by them. It was circumstance. It was the miracle, the, you know, birth. Did you win the sperm lottery? You know, I mean, so many things preordain everything that comes after it. And then you let that shit go and you can find greater, you know, you can lose all that hatred and anger and have access to just love for everybody.
Okay, but let's look at the actual, I agree, but look at the actual in the moment thing that's happening. We're talking about no free will, and we're talking about people having a paralysis of decisions, being pulled all of the different, you know, right? Okay. Yeah. So I'm walking and I go, okay, I either can do this creative act today, or I can, you know, whatever the other thing is, I can exercise, or I can lay down because I'm depressed. I have to make the decision, and I find myself paralyzed in the decision, which one do I do? Then if I take on the idea, this isn't up to me, whatever I choose, right? I'm just witnessing myself make the decision. In that moment, the argument is you're free to make whatever decision you were always going to make without the criticism, right? That's what it is. But does it help you make the thing, make the decision?
The knowledge of the absence of free will, does it help you make the decision?
Yes.
No.
No. Okay.
I don't think so.
Because before I go up on stage, I'll be like, what joke should I do? And then if I don't have enough time, I'll go, well, I have no free will, and whatever happens is going to happen. And usually it's good when I'm able to tap into that thought. Usually it's good, like the set. And I'm like...
Right, but the reason that your set still goes okay after you recognize you're not in control is you are practiced. You've done the work.
Yeah.
It doesn't negate that you have to do... You have to practice your craft and develop yourself in that regard to the thing that you have selected as being your passion and being what you want your life art to be. And you practice at it. You guys go to where you try out new material and it's shitty and it doesn't land well and it has to be reconfigured all the time.
Jamie's here. Okay, this is the last thing I want to say. Because this is important for everybody. Just will you hold up your finger and say 1 second? To her. That feeling of being paralyzed and not knowing what to do with your life, right? That I have been faced with and all of society is being faced with right now. The only reason why I'm doing the thing that I love to do, the only reason why I have this podcast is because you have been like, you can do whatever you want to do. And whatever you do is, and just try shit out. Can you describe to people who are feeling that way? Like, what if I fail? What's the point? Why try anything? Can you tell them what you would say to that?
Fail. A lot. just try, just fail. And then go, whoa, that wasn't the best way to do that. And you just keep reconfiguring the way to try things out, try shit out. I'm not saying that you can do it endlessly. At some point, you have to be financially responsible and you have to choose a path and then craft it out. Keep working it. I mean, I wasn't good at construction. I sucked at construction. I mean, I sucked. I'm shitty at math. I couldn't visualize two walls and a ceiling coming together. But I loved it so much, and I just kept working at it to get good at it. And I was also forced. It wasn't like I had to continue to do it and everything. But fail. People are afraid of failing. Failing is bullshit. It's the wrong word.
Yeah.
We shouldn't even use that word. It's living. You're living, and you fall down, and you get dirt on your face, and you get back up, and you go, fuck, that didn't work good. Let me try it this way. And failing is the source of play, is a way of, you should play. Play, you're going to get knocked down. But that's how you go into the realm of the unknown. And your shit, your good shit's going to come from the realm of the unknown. Not from the known. But you're not going to go into the unknown if you keep playing safe. And hiding from what you call failure or mistakes. It's not mistakes. It's playing full out. You just play full out. That's what I used to tell you a lot.
Yeah.
Just play full out and fucking fall on your face and get muddy and dirty.
Thank you.
And bloody. Sometimes bloody. A little snot too.
Yeah. And you always would go, when I would fail, you'd always go, how'd that feel? Because there was a feeling of like, that was living your life. How does it feel? Let's get back up and go again. And there was a feeling of like, that's not something to be deleted. That was an experience that you had. And, you know, you have gone almost bankrupt. You've been in so many dire straits, and now you have this giant community and all through of Ithaca, these incredible houses. And it really is. And that was, and me, my, everybody included, including me, were like, really? This
no
is your plan?
No one believed.
And the amount of shit that got thrown in your face that was just like, you can't, and no trust, and you remind me of my mother, so I'm not going to let you do anything because I'm a man working at the department of whatever the fuck, and you were just like, well, I'll keep going. And the whole time you did it, you had a wry grin. You had a like, we're playing sports right now. I'm having a blast.
I knew it would be a slog, but I definitely knew I was going to achieve it one way or the other. Yeah.
But the whole time there was humor around it, and there was, you know, you were talking about how much shit you were getting kicked into your face, and you were going, oh my, let me tell you what happened.
I'm probably playing a lot of rugby helped.
Yeah. So play rugby, fall down. Okay,
I don't know about that. Perseverance and tenacity, they're pretty cool things to have. But you have to keep an attitude of play. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a nihilism, who cares, but it's a let's get out there and get fucked up.
Life is short. Yeah. It's short.
Yeah.
It's short, so be plain.
Yeah.
And you will discover the thing that you have a unique talent for. That's the thing that you want to be looking for. What's the thing that I have a unique talent for? Mine actually doesn't happen to be construction.
Yeah.
It's communication more than construction. But
she's going to write a book that we're going to do another interview on when she actually begins.
But I mean, you could argue it's more in that empathic realm. But anyways, find that thing that you're innately good at, that you don't have to work as hard at, that does make your heart sing because it's a little bit easier and it feels more fluid and you can get in a zone, and just discover that, and then don't let anything, then play in that realm.
What's your book going to be called? Because it's good to manifest things outside of yourself and get them out in the world. What is it?
The working title right now is Forgotten Play.
Forgotten Play. It will be made. Were we just talking about that?
No,
were we talking about how saying that you're going to do something out in the world makes it happen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can create that, you can create that listening of you that pulls that from you.
Yeah.
You continue to pull it because wherever you go, people are having a certain, they're like, how's that going? How, like for the development, they're like, how's your project going? And it's like, it continues to draw it out of you and forward, pull you forward into the manifestation that you'd like to have. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Bye.